Hello, everyone. You are listening to the first ever episode of the Mimiverse Monthly Audiocast, a supplemental to the Mimiverse Monthly online newsletter, which has been coming out in some form or another since the very beginning of the Mimiverse. I'm your host, Christopher R. Mim, the writer and director of the Mimiverse series of films. I'm guessing if you're listening to this, there's a very good chance you already know what those are, so I don't know if I necessarily have to go into that in depth. And I'm sure you're thinking to yourself, wait a minute, so you're creating a new podcast show. Don't you already have a podcast show? And the answer is yes. Yes, we do. It's called the Mimiverse Bonfire Podcast, but we've been hearing a lot from fans who have said that they would like a podcast that's maybe a little more focused solely on the movies. The Bonfire Podcast is great. We've been doing it for almost four years now, since the release of Attack of the Moon Zombies in 2011. And the focus of that is much more laid back. It's much more straightforward. Let's hang around a bonfire and talk to the behind-the-scenes folks, the actors, the crew people who help make the films. This is going to be much more focused on the movies themselves, the process in which we make them, a little bit of my creative process as well, which is super pretentious, just like my middle initial. But that is what the Mimiverse Monthly Audiocast is going to be, and we're going to give this a try and see what happens. First off, let's talk a little bit about what is going on in the Mimiverse right now. We are currently hard at work on the next film entitled Danny Johnson Saves the World. This is my tribute to the kids' movies I grew up on, stuff like The Goonies, Princess Bride plays heavily into this, E.T., plus the Muppet films, because I'm a big Muppet guy, I love the Muppets, but also mixed in with, obviously, the 1950s sci-fi horror films that I grew up with as a kid, watching with my dad. So it's my take on a kid's movie. Now, that being said, I keep calling it a kid's movie, and if you've read anything about it, you know I keep calling it a kid's movie, but it's not a movie specifically made only for children. I think that of all my films, they're all kind of for kids. Not just for kids, for the kids in all of us. How about that? That sounds even extra pretentious. I pride myself, and one of the selling points that I always like to say when I'm describing my films for people is that they are safe for kids. They're not made specifically for children, but kids of all ages can enjoy them. I like the fact that a good portion of the fan base are young children. That being said, I don't make mindless kids' movies. My movies are scary enough to give kids a thrill, but not enough to traumatize them. I like the fact that you could literally have three, four generations of a family sitting around and watching one of my films and enjoying it. You know, there's one thing about modern kids' entertainment that bothers me is that a lot of times it plays to the lowest common denominator and it's specifically targeted. You know, and that's kind of the way movies have gone in the last 50 years is that eventually, you know, they figured out the blockbuster formula, as it were, and decided that they were just going to follow it. And as a result, you end up with everything being, you know, crafted in such a way to be as targeted as possible to the people that spend the most money, which from a business perspective makes a lot of sense. However, from a creative perspective, I think you end up, a lot of people say that they get kind of sick of it. You know, I love the Avengers and Marvel movies and, you know, big budget movies as much as anyone else, but no one makes them like they used to, but I am trying really hard to do that. So thank you very much for checking out my films and for listening to me ramble, which I'm going to do. And if you like it, yay. If you don't, thanks for listening. So anyway, we are currently shooting Danny Johnson Saves the World, which for those of you who've seen all the other films, and if you haven't, you should perhaps go and check them out. They're available on SaintEuphoria.com, the official website of the Mimiverse, or you can pick them up at Amazon. You can also watch them or download them or rent them on Amazon Prime. If you're one of those modern folks who's like not interested in purchasing physical copies of media anymore, check out Amazon. However, after having done a lot of events, people ask, oh, can I download them anymore? My line is always, well, yeah, but I can't sign a download. So if you want an autograph, it'd be useful to maybe pick up physical copies, of which, if you order physical copies on SaintEuphoria.com, autographs are always free. Or if you come see us at an event, perhaps a convention or a screening of one of the films, we will gladly sign stuff for free. At least I will, and so far all the actors will too. Yes, we are currently knee-deep shooting Danny Johnson Saves the World. There's a link, and this is what I was getting to before I totally went off on a tangent, of which you will get, probably if you listen to me after a little while, you will get used to the fact that I constantly wander. One of the things I've always liked to do very early on was that all my films do exist in the same universe, thus the Mimiverse. So you have characters that will recur from movie to movie, and you'll have actors who will play themselves, their character, but then also, say, relatives of that character. The perfect example being Josh Craig, who played Professor Jackson in several films, but then also played his son, Captain Jackson, in Destination Outer Space, of which I'm going to get back to Destination Outer Space at one point in this audio cast. And if you are a fan of that film and were not happy with how it ends, it's not much of a spoiler, but it ends on a to be continued, which I've gotten some flack for that. But we'll come back to that, and we'll talk a little bit about how you might be excited to hear that it may, in fact, be continued. Danny Johnson was a character played by Elliot Mim, who is my son. First seen in the film, Terror from Beneath the Earth. He was, at the time, I think 5 years old when we filmed that, 6 years old. He was just a little kid, and he was one of the children who was kidnapped by the bat creature in Terror from Beneath the Earth, of which, if you have not seen Terror from Beneath the Earth, you're missing out on one of the best Mimiverse monsters to date. Still consistently comes up as the favorite amongst fans that I meet. They love the bat. Danny Johnson was introduced in that film and has reappeared in a couple other places in the Mimiverse. For one, he has a small role in the very beginning of The Giant Spider. Of course, he sort of introduces the film as the kid running through the woods. Now, when we've completed the late night double feature, one of the things I wanted to do was, with every film, I try to do something a little different. Maybe it's a technique. For one, The Giant Spider is a good example. I wanted to try something with a giant bug. It seemed like a giant bug movie was something I should try. As a guy who apes the films of the 50s, a giant bug movie made sense. With the late night double feature, I wanted to try doing two shorter films together and create a faux double feature. One of the things I'd been talking about for a long time is I really wanted to, A, make a movie with puppets, which I mentioned the Muppets earlier. We created our own Mimiverse Muppets. Ruby Gallinati, who is our lighting designer and appeared in a couple films, including The Giant Spider and X the Fiend from Beyond Space, suggested we call them Mippets, as in Mim Muppets. I'm okay with that, but it sounds a little weird to me. But they're puppets, Muppet style. Secondly, we finally are getting my cool 50s robot, which I'm very excited about. And if you've seen the preview, if you go on YouTube and look up the Mimiverse channel, there is a preview of Danny Johnson Saves the World, and in it you can see the awesome 1950s robot that Mitch Gonzalez created. Actually, it's a great story. I met him in 2007 at Crypticon, which is a horror convention in Minneapolis. At the time, I had two films, The Monster Phantom Lake and It Came from Another World, and we were on the verge of finishing Cave Women on Mars, and he came up to our table and was impressed with the classic stylings of our films and was really curious into checking them out, and he mentioned that he does latex work, which sounds dirty if you think about it. I do latex work. But he did masks and stuff, and he, you know, at the time I was like, oh, okay, sure, buddy, whatever, until he started sending me pictures of his work, and I realized, wow, this guy's actually quite talented. And of course, we didn't actually get him involved until Destination Outer Space, when he came in and he played several characters, monsters, and did some masks and some prosthetic work for the film, and then ever since then has sort of taken over as the guy to go to when it comes to trying cool classic practical special effects techniques and latex mask work. He was the guy who created the Moon Zombies. He created X the Fiend from Beyond Space. He did the Angel of Death and House of Ghosts. And we're great friends now, and it's a great collaboration, and it always works very nicely. So he created this 1950s robot for Danny Johnson, which is fantastic. Usually I don't release a video of one of my films except for on Halloween, which I hope you guys checked out on Halloween, the 24-hour preview. I usually don't release video of my films until the film comes out. I usually will just release stills, and this time seeing that robot in action with the sound effects and all the music and everything together, I couldn't resist. So there is a cool preview on YouTube on the Mimiverse channel that I highly recommend you check out. So Danny Johnson Saves the World is currently in production. We have probably a month left of shooting it. Now, that's not to say a month of straight shooting. We shoot mostly on the weekends, especially working with kids. We build sets during the week. So the last day I believe we have scheduled for the shoot is December 16th. So let's hope we stick to that. A very good chunk of the film is also edited. Because we shoot usually on the weekends, or there's, you know, at least a week, sometimes maybe two between shoot dates, I can then edit the footage I get and make sure I'm happy. And if I have to go back, I can go back. It's actually a nice process, and it's worked very well for me all these times. And of course, this is movie number 10, so obviously it's worked, at least for what I do. I don't know what other filmmakers do, but it works very nicely for me and for the Mimiverse. So again, that's what's going on with Danny Johnson. One of the things that I do want to suggest to people, if you are a fan of the films and you would like to see them continue, one of the things we've been doing for years since Destination Outer Space is selling contributor credits. And what contributor credits are is that you can get your name or a name of your choosing. It could be a dog. I mean, I have a guy who actually literally has put his dog's name in one of my movies for the last like 3 years. He's a great guy. You could do your dog. You could do your business if you'd like, your website, whatever you'd like to do within reason. You can purchase a credit, which gets you your name in the end credits, either a copy of the film, finished film on DVD, or a ticket to the premiere. And they're $25. That's the beginning sort of thing. $25 gets you a credit, gets you either a DVD or a ticket to the premiere. And you also will get a cool signed frameable certificate saying you contributed. And one of the things we're doing this year is a la carte, which is to say, if you want to order additional copies of the DVD or additional tickets to the premiere, you can do so right off the bat for an additional charge. So you can buy a credit for $25 and have your free DVD coming with it and your certificate. But then you could also pre-order two tickets to the world premiere, which should, as long as we stay on task, should be next May 2015, ideally at the Heights Theater, since that's where we've always done our premieres, at the Heights Theater in Columbia Heights, Minnesota. So please consider being a contributor. Everything you contribute to the film, it literally goes right into the film. It goes into building sets. It goes into paying for food to feed the actors. You would think $25 isn't that much, but it really helps. The other thing that I'd like to say about contributor credits right now, there are some major gift-giving holidays coming up. Of those holidays, one of the things that I do this time of year is that if you would like to give a contributor credit as a gift, which is a unique gift you won't find anywhere else. I mean, it's your loved ones or your best friends or whatever, your loved one's name in a movie at the end credits. How cool is that? You can give them as gifts. And one of the things we'll do this time of year is I will, because there's not really anything you can open per se if you order a contributor credit, because you don't get anything until the movie's finished and released next year. One of the things we'll do for this time of year is I will print out a letter. They'll get a letter stating that they have been given a credit at the end of a movie. And I'll sign it, and it's a cool little collectible that I only do this time of year. So if you're interested, please check out our website at SaintEuphoria.com. If you go under the movies tab, the top movie, they're listed by date of release. So the top movie in that list is Danny Johnson Saves the World. If you click on that, it'll take you to the Danny Johnson page. And from there, there's a link that will take you right to the contributor section. Otherwise, simply go to SaintEuphoria.com, all spelled out, SaintEuphoria.com, which is, I'm guessing if you're listening to this and found this in the Mimiverse Monthly, you already know that. SaintEuphoria.com/contributor.html. Check it out, contribute to the film, and we hope to see your name up in lights. All right, as we continue on, I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that are going on as of right now. Two very cool events taking place, which you can attend. For one, on November 8th, the Late Night Double Feature, the latest film, was accepted to and will screen at the 2014 Drunken Zombie Film Festival at 11 p.m. And in fact, it's the last movie of the entire film festival, which can either be a good thing, if you look at it as, oh, wow, hey, we're capping off the fest, or maybe a bad thing because everyone will be sick of watching movies all day and be like, yeah, I'm not staying up anymore for this one. I hope you guys stay and check it out. It's a good movie. It's literally called the Late Night Double Feature. I can't think of a better time to screen it than 11 o'clock on a Saturday night. So that's the Drunken Zombie Film Festival, and that takes place at the Landmark Cinemas in Peoria, Illinois. The Drunken Zombie Film Festival, you can learn more if you go to drunkenzombiefilmfestival.com. Otherwise, on November 29th, at 6 p.m., The Giant Spider will be screening at the Sideshow Freak Film Festival. Writer-director Christopher R. Mim, that being me, will be in attendance, and I will participate in a Q&A session, meet and greet after the film, and that's at the Ambrosia Theater in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Now, the Sideshow Freak Flick Film Festival does not have a website, but you can look them up on Facebook. The other thing I want to mention that we mentioned on the, if you are not a fan of the Mimiverse on Facebook, the Films of Christopher R. Mim have a page on there, and we started a little contest. Danny Johnson is the 10th film. We're doing a contest, which is for people to show us your Mimiverse collection. Over the years, we have released, obviously, 10 films, but also a slew of cool collectibles and interesting things. And we ask that if you have a collection of Mimiverse memorabilia, whatever it is, get it all together into a pile. Make it look nice. Take a photo of it and send it to chris@sainteuphoria.com or through Facebook. Send us that photo, and we are going to judge the 10 best collections. And those 10 best collections, they'll be judged by me, as well as some other actors and behind-the-scenes players, and the best collections will receive special credits in the end credits of Danny Johnson. I'm not sure what I'm going to call it yet, but you'll get a special thanks mention in the credits for your support. So please send us your photos of your collections. Whatever your Mimiverse stuff is, let us know what you got. Show us. And perhaps you too can win a free credit. Lastly, I want to talk a little bit about, I mentioned Destination Outer Space. Destination Outer Space was my sci-fi epic that I released in 2010, starring Josh Craig as Captain Jackson, who is hurtled to the other side of the galaxy, where he fights monsters and space pirates. And generally, the idea behind Destination Outer Space was that, and this is the way I often try to explain it to people when I do events, is that it's basically Star Wars as if it were made by Ed Wood. Now, if that appeals to a person, they generally, if they get that, they're interested in the film. One of the things about the film is that it ends, because it is serialized in nature, you could easily break the film up into several, say, 20-minute serial pieces. It's episodic in nature. And of course, it made sense to me that you would want to end it on a cool cliffhanger. That being said, I've gotten a little bit of grief over the years of people asking me, are you ever going to finish the story? Will it ever be continued? Well, I have an idea. First off, let me say that after I make Danny Johnson Saves the World, I have decided after making 10 features in 10 years, I think I have earned a small break. And so in 2015, my plans are to take a short break from making features and focus on a couple other things Mimiverse related, one of which is the Monster Phantom Lake, the stage musical. If you came to The Night Before the Thing, which was our premiere party for the late night double feature, we did a little preview of the Monster Phantom Lake, the musical. The music is being written and orchestrated by an extremely talented individual named Adam Bowl, who I met through Mike Cook. Mike Cook being an actor who has been in almost every single Mimiverse film. I'm sure if you're listening to this, you recognize the name. He's Dr. Edwards. He's Gustav. He's Mike Cook. He introduced me to Adam. Adam is a great guy and a very, very talented musician. And we started talking about the concept of doing the Monster Phantom Lake as a stage musical. And Adam really took the ball and ran with it. And he has written several, several fantastic songs. I told him that I specifically wanted to adapt my film for the stage. So that was my role. Years ago, we started talking about this, and I just never, ever put the time into it because, specifically, I was always working on a new feature. And it always took precedence over this other project. I figured after doing 10 movies in 10 years, I earned a year to do something a little different. Thus, I am committed to completing the script for the Monster Phantom Lake, the musical, so that we may get it all together. He's way ahead of me already. We can get it all together so that we can premiere it in 2016 when we would normally premiere our newest feature. It's also, 2016 will be the 10th anniversary of the release of The Monster of Phantom Lake. So I have some big plans for 2016 to be the year of The Monster of Phantom Lake. I started thinking about this and realized that once I finish my part of The Monster of Phantom Lake, the stage musical, a lot of it is then out of my hands because Mike Cook, Adam Bowell have all graciously agreed to sort of go from there and start workshopping and putting together. I'm not a theater guy, I'm a movie guy. So a lot of that process I'm not familiar with, and we'll be stepping back and letting them take the reins. So I realize that I may end up with a lot of downtime, which I may just enjoy as time to not worry about movies. Then again, I know me and I will get bored. So I came up with this great idea. What if I continue and maybe even wrap up the story of Destination Outer Space by creating a serial YouTube series? The idea started to gain traction, and I've talked to some principal players from Destination Outer Space, and they are interested, and so am I. I think it would start very well doing, say, 6 5-minute episodes. They wouldn't be as grueling to film as, say, a feature, which is what I think I need, but would be fun and would allow me to, you know, keep my skills sharp, as it were, but then also to keep the Mimiverse growing. So I think the plan may be, after the release of Danny Johnson, after I spend some time finishing up my part in The Monster of Phantom Lake, the stage musical, Destination Outer Space, the web series. So stay tuned. I like the idea. I want to do it. Maybe I need you guys to push me and keep me focused on that, but I would really like to. So that's enough, I think, of what's going on. Right now, let's do a little something fun. I have a special guest, Derek M. Cook, who is the host of Monster Kid Radio, which is a great podcast if you are a fan of classic monster films. And I'm guessing if you like my movies, you probably are. Or maybe you're at least monster curious, and I think you should check him out. Monster Kid Radio is probably the best podcast out there. It's one of the most professionally produced podcasts that I've ever heard. And Derek knows what the heck he's talking about. Monster Kid Radio. I asked him if he would help me out a little bit with this first episode and maybe do this as an ongoing thing. So I'm going to toss this over to Derek for a little section that we're going to tentatively call Monster Kid Movies with Derek M. Cook.
When I'm not checking out the latest updates at SaintEuphoria.com or watching one of the movies directed by Christopher R. Mim, I'm producing my own show, Monster Kid Radio, where we celebrate the classics and sometimes not-so-classic genre cinema of yesteryear. I'm Derek M. Cook, and I love classic monster movies, and that's why I love the movies of Christopher R. Mim. He draws his inspiration from a lot of these classic monster movies, these classic horror and sci-fi films from the 50s, and I can't help but notice possible inspirations from some of these classic movies when it comes to his work. For example, when I look at the movie The Giant Spider from 2013, I can't help but notice some similarities between some characters in that movie, and then another one of my own favorite movies from 1953 called The Magnetic Monster.
Process might have been the origin of the solar system.
Yes, gentlemen. We're witnessing the secret of creation.
Mr. Mayor, the city must go dark to supply the power we need.
And after 11 hours?
What then?
Then we'll need the entire power of Boulder Dam to feed it.
We must make preparation to evacuate the city.
Looking like creatures from another planet, these two scientists risked their lives to move the new Titanic element to the one place where they might fight it.
I'm going to set the machine and leave in time. So are the men.
But she isn't built to take such a load. She'll break up.
Dr. Benton, our only hope is that she'll break that element before she breaks herself.
This one man stood between the Earth and doom. Only he dared face the terror of the monstrous thing that had suddenly come alive. A cosmic Frankenstein that threatened to engulf the world and hurl it into outer space.
I'm now going to set the Deltatron at its maximum output and close the floodgates. I want you all to leave. You've got about 7 minutes to reach the surface.
See the magnetic monster battle its deadliest enemy, the giant Deltatron. See the last desperate chance they took to check its appalling power. See it shatter the steel walls of its mammoth prison beneath the sea.
The magnetic monster stars Christopher's fellow Minnesotan, Richard Carlson. Richard Carlson is probably best known to people like us as one of the leading men in the movie The Creature from the Black Lagoon, but he did a number of other science fiction films as well, like It Came from Outer Space, Riders to the Stars, and The Maze. I'm a big fan of this man's work, and The Magnetic Monster really is an opportunity for him to showcase what he can do in an independent science fiction film. Now, The Magnetic Monster is the first of three films featuring what's called the Office of Scientific Investigation, or OSI. There were three films that featured this government agency: The Magnetic Monster, Riders to the Stars, and then the movie GOG. Richard Carlson was involved in two of these films, not as the same person. He actually directed one of them. In The Magnetic Monster, he is just the actor. The film was actually directed by Herbert Strock and Kurt Siodmak. Kurt Siodmak is the man who wrote the Universal film The Wolfman and also wrote a number of other classic monster movies and science fiction movies of the 40s and 50s. He was also a novelist, and one of his most famous novels was probably Donovan's Brain, which was turned into a film three times. Anyway, back to The Magnetic Monster and why I think this would be an interesting film to watch as part of a double feature with The Giant Spider. No, there's not a giant bug in The Magnetic Monster. It's about another kind of alien, some other kind of life form trying to take over the world, and it's up to the OSI to stop it. Richard Carlson plays Dr. Jeffrey Stewart, and it's him and his fellow scientific adventurers that are trying to save the day. And when I watch a movie like The Giant Spider, and I see Dr. Gabriel and Dr. Edwards, played by James Norgard and Michael Cook respectively, I can't help but think that these two guys would have at least worked with the OSI at one point, maybe did some sort of exchange program or consulted with them on a case or two. I love the idea of the scientist hero. It's something that's resonated with me for a long time. That's why I like a lot of MIMS movies, and that's why I like movies like The Magnetic Monster or the Quatermass films. Another interesting thing about The Magnetic Monster is the way the women are portrayed. Now, we all know that the movies in the 50s, they were a little sexist at times, for better or worse. It's indicative of its era, and MIM does a really good job of commenting on this, sometimes in a humorous way, and sometimes in a very subtle way. Now, in The Magnetic Monster, the way Dr. Stewart interacts with his wife, who's played by Jean Byron, it's indicative of this underlying sexism and the way men treated women, the role of the woman in the family, that sort of thing in these 50s movies. Well, in The Giant Spider, Mim does this a little bit as well when he has Dr. Hackett interacting with General Castle, for example, or even the way Howard Johnson interacts with his fiance. In Mim's movies, it's done with fun, kind of making some commentary on the way these movies portrayed women and man-woman relationships in the films. I don't think we can really damn these movies for being an artifact of their time. And I would say that with The Magnetic Monster, it's more harmless than you would see in other films. And I think seeing that compared to the way Dr. Hackett and General Castle interact with each other in The Giant Spider would make a nice, interesting contrast and an opportunity to kind of poke fun at some of the more unenlightened attitudes of a bygone era. Unenlightened attitudes or not, The Magnetic Monster is a fun ride. It's a really great film. It was an independent film, and it was distributed by United Artists. It was released in 1953. It runs just a little over an hour, like an hour 15, so it's a nice, short, compact film. It's got some great effects in it. And I think the title itself tells you what kind of monster the characters are going to be up against. However, it's not very monstrous. In The Giant Spider, it's very in your face. It's clearly about a giant spider. In The Magnetic Monster, there's not this huge, big, monstrous thing running around. At least, not at the beginning of the film. And that's the whole point. That's what the OSI and Dr. Stewart and his partner, Dr. Dan Forbes, played by King Donovan, are trying to stop. What this monster is trying to become, which will eventually become big enough to destroy the Earth if the OSI doesn't stop them. And if the OSI isn't there to stop them, well, I think Dr. Edwards and Dr. Gabriel could probably handle it themselves. You can find me on my home podcast, Monster Kid Radio, at monsterkidradio.net. We release two episodes a week, every Tuesday and Thursday, and we talk about nothing but these types of movies. The movies that we love so much from this era, from the 30s through the 60s, with occasional toe-dipping outside of that time period for some films that might throw back to this era, like the movies of Christopher R. Mem. This has been Monster Kid Movies with Monster Kid Radio's Derek M. Cook. Talk to you next time when I get all spooky and Bela Lugosi on ya. Kind of.
Thank you, Derek, for doing that. I really appreciate it, and I hope you guys liked his suggestion, and I think you should check it out. This guy knows what he's talking about. You should listen. Now, one other thing I wanted to throw into this new audio cast is something a little... Each episode, do something a little unique. Something you literally cannot get anywhere else that is Mimiverse related, but something you've never heard before. Some of the ideas I've had is maybe there are a couple scripts I started writing that I never finished that I may do some dramatic readings of. That is not what's happening today. Instead, about a year ago, I started this idea of trying to create an old school pulp sci-fi magazine called Tales of the Fantastic. It never came together the way I wanted it to. Honestly, like everything else, the movies took precedence and it just fell by the wayside. However, I had several great authors submit stories to be included, and they're great, and I want them to see the light of day. I talked to one of the authors, a man named Stephen D. Sullivan, a very, very talented author, who wrote a story called The Haunted Canoe, A Canoe Cop's Adventure. And I asked him if I could read it to you guys. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to read his story. It's not very long. It's a great little short story told first person by a canoe cop about an interesting experience this canoe cop had. Now, if you don't know who the canoe cops are and you're just, say, a fan of my later work, please check out The Monster Phantom. Like, it came from another world to find out what you're missing when it comes to the canoe cops. And of course, the paddle girls were mentioned and seen in The Giant Spider. So here it is. The Haunted Canoe, A Canoe Cop's Adventure by Stephen D. Sullivan. I know you're not going to believe me, but I swear to God it's true. Every word of it. All true. Here's what happened. I'm paddling on the far side of Phantom Lake, up by Corman's Creek, just doing my regular patrol, you know? It's been a quiet day. No speeders, no skinny dippers, nobody fishing without a license, nothing. Just nice and boring the whole day long. Hot, though. You know how it gets in July out here in the middle of Wisconsin. And you ladies were out on the lake today, too, weren't you? You must have been, or you couldn't have rescued me. Anyway, the sun's going down, and my shift's over, and I'm thinking, phew, at last, now I can paddle back to base and get some rest. So I turn trusty old canoe number 13 around and head out across the middle of the lake. That's the quickest way home, isn't it? But as I'm gliding past Jackson Island, I notice some rustling in the woods. It's hard to make out at first, because the sun is setting behind the island and the trees are pretty thick on that shoreline. Then I see this paddle girl wading out from the forest into the water toward my canoe, waving at me. I don't recognize her, but the way she's waving, I figure maybe she got stranded out on the island somehow. Maybe her canoe sprang a leak, or maybe it's part of some paddle girl prank or a hazing or something. I know you girls can get pretty wild sometimes. No, don't interrupt. I'm just getting to the good part. So I help this girl into the boat, and I definitely do not know her. But I figure canoe cops, paddle girls, all for one and one for all. Am I right? She's slim and good-looking. I mean, most of you girls are, but I mean really good-looking. She's got long, wavy black hair, dark eyes, and a great figure. Her uniform looks a little odd to me, but with the sun setting and all, I can't really dope out why. I figure maybe it's just messed up because she's been out in the woods or got dumped out of her canoe or something. Hey, how you doing? I say. I'm canoe cop Kelton. You get stranded on the island? Something like that, she replies, almost whispering. She just sits there in the stern of my canoe, gazing off of the lake, all silent-like. What's your name? I ask. Veronica, she says, talking louder now. She has a deep, sexy voice, like a movie star. You must be a new recruit, I say, smiling at her. I know all the other paddle girls. That's when I realize why her uniform looks different than yours. It's got less stuff on it, you know, badges and piping and that kind of thing. That makes sense, I guess, because she's a new volunteer. I'm pretty proud of myself for figuring it out. Oh, I've been around a while, she tells me, and then goes back to staring at the water. I shrug and get paddling along. She starts rubbing her arms like she's cold, and I feel bad because I don't have a blanket in the canoe with me. Guess I forgot to pack the emergency kit this morning. I'd offer her my shirt, but you know how the boss feels about us canoe cops being out of uniform. Don't worry, I say, trying to be reassuring. I'll get you back to base in a jiffy. I settle into a nice, steady stroke, heading out across the deepest part of Phantom Lake, taking the shortest route home. She sits in the stern, not saying anything, just staring off into space, like she's trying to think of something and can't quite remember what it is. Anyway, while I'm dipping my paddle, moving us steadily homeward, looking at the prow of the canoe and trying not to stare at this beautiful girl, I suddenly remember the story about that paddle girl that drowned 10 years back. Wasn't her name Veronica too, I think? And wasn't she out in Canoe 13 when it happened? That's a kind of funny coincidence, it seems to me. So I turn around to mention it to this girl I rescued, and wham! I nearly jump out of my pants, pardon the expression, ladies, because now Veronica looks totally different. Scary different. She's sopping wet from the top of her head to the tip of her boots. Her hair is lakeweed all tangled through it, and her uniform is ripped and torn almost to pieces. And I realize that it's an old uniform, not a modern one for a novice paddler, like maybe a 10-year-old uniform. It looks like it's been in the water a long time. Not only that, but her skin's all pale and she has big dark circles around her eyes. And those eyes, let me tell you, her eyes are all green and blazing like hot coals. If burning coals could be green, I mean. She opens her mouth and hisses at me like a snake, and her teeth are all rotted. She looks like that dead girl that canoe cop Callahan pulled out of the lake last summer, you know, the one that got killed by her boyfriend and then dumped and they didn't find her for 3 weeks, except this girl looks worse. I've never seen anything so awful in my life. I'm so startled that I drop my paddle. I want to scream, but my voice gets all caught in my throat, and then, before I can gather my wits, she jumps me. She wraps her cold, clammy arms around my body, pinning my arms to my sides. She's strong, too, like Dick the Bruiser, one of those pro wrestling guys. I'm struggling, but I can't break free. And she leans toward me, mouth open, and I can see those rotten teeth, and her breath smells worse than weak old swamp water, and the weeds in her hair are dripping on me, and now I am screaming, and she's trying to kiss me or something, but I keep pulling away. She hisses at me again, "So warm." I lean back as far as I can, right over the side of the canoe, trying to keep away from her, but I lean too far. Quick as that, we're over the gunwale and falling. I manage to get off one last scream before we hit the water. Probably that's what you heard before you came and rescued me. The lake is cold, despite the hot day, and the sun's almost down, and it's getting darker and darker, and I'm kicking and struggling, but she still got me, and I don't have any air, and we're going down, down, into the deepest part of Phantom Lake, and it's getting colder and colder, and I think, I don't want to die. Not like she did. And everything goes black. Next thing I know, I'm lying on the beach, flat on my back, and all you ladies are gathered around me like chicks around a mother hen. Except, of course, mother hens aren't usually half-drowned. And they're not guys. Anyway, thanks for rescuing me. Paddle girl Paula shoots me a disbelieving frown. Oh, come on, Kelton. Why don't you just admit that you were up too late last night, having a few beers so you dozed off and fell out of your canoe? Hey, Paula, you know that's not it, paddle girl Margot pipes in. She's laughing and has a big grin plastered across her pudgy face. Kelton jumped into Phantom Lake deliberately. He just wanted you to give him mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Paula turns beet red and I can feel myself blushing too, but what else can I say? I swear to God, though, it's true. Every word of it. All true. And if you don't believe me, you can take Canoe 13 out on patrol next time. The end. All right, that was fantastic. I want to thank Stephen D. Sullivan for allowing me to share that story with you and for writing it in the first place. I love it. There's another one, and perhaps next month we'll read it. This does it for the very first Memoverse Monthly audio cast. The last thing I want to say is don't forget, the holidays are coming up, and the films of the Memoverse make great gifts. Order them now. Get them soon. Anything you order can and will be signed. We have DVDs, we have a couple Blu-rays, posters, lobby cards, and some other cool stuff that we will make available over the next couple months. And don't forget, contributor credits. How cool and unique a gift is that? Your loved one's name in the end credits of a movie. Thank you for listening. I am writer-director Christopher R. Mim and your host. Good night.